Country music fan, particularly classic country, join me, Cope Reynolds, every Friday night for Liberty Lounge right here on Survival Circle Network.
Nothing ever happened around my hometown. I ain't kind of just hanging around. But I heard someone call my name one day, and I followed that voice down the line.
absolutely the fastest 2 hours on internet radio, Liberty Lounge, every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, 10 to midnight Eastern, right here on Survival Circle. Welcome to the Shooting Bench. For the next hour, I'll be bringing you commentary and important updates on current events, as well as information on guns, training, preparedness, and other liberty-related issues. Let's get started. RAT, right now. Right, here we are. Welcome to the Shooting Bench, the 11th of April, and it's a Monday. Got a few things I want to share with you tonight, and for those of you that are just coming in, we announced at the end of Amy's show we're thinking about doing something different. It's just, as all of you probably have figured out, everything that we do here is free. And it's just getting to be too much. We do, four, six, seven, nine, ten. We are on the air 10 hours a week, and between the two of us, and that's not counting preparation time. You know, I don't do nearly the preparation time. It comes a little more naturally for me than it does for Amy, but she has a hard time with it sometimes. So, you know, for an hour show, she has, hour and a half of preparation time. So it's just getting to be too much. We've done it for so many years, and we backed off on Amy's a little bit. What we're thinking about doing is, what we backed off on hers, what, a year ago or, you know, several months ago? What we're thinking about doing, especially for the summer months, because with time not changing here, when it would normally be 8 o'clock for everybody else, in order for us to maintain that 8 o'clock Pacific time, we have to go to, or I'm sorry, 7 o'clock Pacific time. Now we had to change to 7 o'clock here to match Pacific, and then in the winter time we change back to 8 o'clock for her show. And 7 o'clock's just too early. In the summertime, it's still daylight for, you know, nearly 3 hours. And there's just so much to do here. What we're thinking about doing is doing pre-records over the weekend so that they'll be fresh and current, and Monday nights do pre-records for both of us so that we have a night devoted to family. You know, Fridays and Saturdays, a lot of times it's either travel or other things going on, so Mondays would be a good time for family time, you know, watch movies, go to dinner, do stuff like that, and not be tied down to this computer again. So there are going to be some changes made. We're not sure exactly what the changes are going to be or when they're going to take effect, but they will be happening here in the not-too-distant future. And so I hope that doesn't interfere with everybody's schedule. I'm sorry for if it's inconvenient for you, but basically the only thing that's going to be different, stand by just a second here. The only thing that's going to be different is that you will not be able to interact with us on Mondays if we go that way, and Amy is leaning that direction, so good possibility that that's what we're going to do. The only thing is you won't be able to talk to us on the chat room, but it'll all be fresh and current, so... All right, we'll try that and see what happens. I say that. We still got to wait for Amy's approval. But I'm thinking that that's going to be a good idea. Trying to keep her from giving up completely, or just going down to one night a week. I know if that's what we had to do to keep her around, then we could, but I'd rather not do that if we don't have to. Hopefully she'll agree to do pre-records on Mondays, and that will only give her, aside from the pre-records, she'll only be on two nights, you know, Tuesday and Thursday, live. So, but we'll work it out. Maybe another option might be for her to do a show on Fridays. No, that wouldn't be good either, because that'd be too early on Friday nights. So, anyway, that's kind of what we're thinking about. So, all right, let's look at some of the stuff that's been going on here the last few days. There's, let me see where to start. Let me roll down. I got a bunch of them here. Okay, we've done that one. Let's just start for the heck of it in no particular order here. I guess you saw where Bruce Springsteen has canceled his North Carolina concert over their anti-LGBT religious freedom law. And he's, you know, that to me, you know, being a staunch supporter and believer in the Constitution, you know, as much as I despise that way of life, as much as I absolutely, those people to me are the most despicable, some of the most despicable people on earth. But if that's what they want to do, then that should be fine. But to have laws that allows that kind of behavior in schools and, you know, the bathrooms now in several places where they're saying if you feel like you're a girl and you want to go to the girl's bathroom, then, you know, knock yourself out. They didn't do that when I was a kid. No, that was, I think it's ugly. It's a despicable thing. And that and the other types of laws that are going into effect in various states around the country. And then this guy, this Bruce Springsteen, and there was another one. I forgot who the other one was. Another popular guy canceling concerts in another state over similar laws. You know, I say, and he feels strongly enough about it that he's, you know, he's issuing refunds. It's costing him, obviously, a ton of money. So, as despicable as I think it is. Brian Adams, thank you, BB Burner, yeah. As despicable as I think it is, you've got to kind of halfway respect the guy for dropping that much money. Of course, he's got no telling how many bazillion dollars anyway. But to lose, you know, probably several hundred thousand dollars for what this is going to cost him here because of his beliefs. And we have a hard time getting people to donate $5 for something when the Patriots are doing anything. You know, we have a very select few people that try and as hard as they can to help when they can. But the other side of that is that we have literally, you know, tens of thousands, probably hundreds of thousands of people that claim to be patriots, but they don't ever go anywhere. They don't ever do anything. They don't donate anything to the people that do. They don't go to rallies. They don't do anything, but they're patriot. Yes, sir, I'm patriot. You betcha. Yeah, I'm a big time supporter. You know, John Birch Society. Rah rah rah. But they don't have any problem finding the time and the money to go to Bruce Springsteen concerts or buy $6 cups of coffee or stay out late at night, you know, watching movies and doing stuff like that. But it's always too much trouble too much trouble and cost too much money to do patriot stuff. It's like the meme on Facebook says, everybody wants to be a patriot until it's time to do patriot stuff. And we say it in every single group of people out there. The ones that claim to be patriots, the ones that claim not to be patriots, the one that, you know, that's not true. That's not true. We find people on the other side, on the left, even the far left, that always seem to be able to make, of course, they're not working. You know, that makes a difference. But they always seem to be able to find time to go to this stuff, and they always seem to be well-financed. Of course, I know that there's, you know, George Soros and some of these other people that put a lot of money into this. But, you know, we have lots of millionaire patriots out there. Some of them put a few bucks in here and there, and some of them don't. You know, we've got Chuck Norris and the Mandrell sisters Brad Paisley. You know, we got quite a few. There's singers and movie stars and stuff like that. And they could put in a lot of money into this movement if they just would. But they just don't. So, and I've griped about this more than once, and I will gripe about it more than once more. But, you know, for those of you that are not able to go and do something, I'm not talking about the few people in the chat room, I'm talking about everybody that listens to the show. If you're not able to make it and do things personally, and I understand completely, more than anybody, that you can't always, some of us are tied down to jobs, good jobs that we can't afford to just walk off and leave. I understand that people have, vehicle payments and mortgages and all this kind of stuff, and you can't just walk away and leave it. But surely that there's times when you can send, you say, well, I would be there, I would go in a minute if I didn't have to work. Okay, if you would go and it cost you $250 for fuel and motel or whatever for you to go, if you can't go, how about donating some of that money to people that can? So that people can get have the fuel and the means for lodging and the gear and all the support stuff that it takes to make some of these trips. Some of them are pretty cotton picking expensive. But you know, we got this guy on Amy's show here that I'm not going to say one bad thing about him, because what an awesome guy he was to. In one night to donate, or one afternoon, to donate $2,500 to people that he didn't even know. What an amazing individual. And I won't knock him for a second. But I know that there are other people like him out there that could donate $1,000 and never bat an eye. But when they don't see, you know, starving Ethiopians on TV, or mistreated dogs or something like that, they're unwilling to donate to causes where they don't actually see what their money is doing. And, you know, that's it's unfortunate. But pretty soon, pretty damn soon, a lot of this is going to come to a screeching halt. Because there are people like me and like Tampa Go Scout, and there's other people out there that, you know, we have refrained from getting tied down on regular 9-to-5 jobs 5 days a week, because when we do, then it's over. Because we can't start a job and get up there and say, okay, well, I'm sorry, but this week, I've got to go to Bundy Ranch, or I've got to go to wherever, and there's a rally in Montana that I have to go to, and it's going to take me, you know, 2 days to get up there and 2 days to get back, and I'll stay there for a couple, so I'll be gone a week. Will you hold my job for me till I get back? Better yet, how about why don't you just pay me, put me on salary and pay me while I'm gone, because I am a hell of a good guy, and I'm a good hand, and I'm making you money, so why don't you just pay me to go up there? That would work well. But, anyway, there's going to come a time, you know, we have other guys out there that, you know, Eddie and C7 and B2 Basic and Long Slide. Let's see who all else in the chat room that that I know for sure has participated in stuff like this. Let's see. That's all. BB Burner has as much as he could. It's tough for him, as like it is for the rest of us here. So these people, I've seen them. I've seen each of them take time off when they couldn't afford the time off, to take vacation time that they would have rather spent with their families in the summertime or something, so they could go and support the movement. And it's just it's heartbreaking to me to see all this. But I'm going to go here. I'm going to get off of that now and quit crying in my beer here. Let's see. Somebody asked about Brian Adams a while ago. Let me give you a little taste of Brian Adams here. Let me see here. Here we go, right here. All right, here is Brian Adams.
I don't like
that's not
brag,
Brian Adams. Stand by a minute.
But we're kind of proud.
Are you willing to be pushed? When are we going to put our collection same freedoms that you did when you were young?
You see, here you go. We got a little hole in that flag. All right. There. Starting right now.
Does this country remind you of the America that you grew up in? Do your children enjoy the same freedoms that you did?
That's the instrumental part of it. There you go. Take me on. You must be crazy. There ain't a single thing you've done that's gonna faze me. Just how far? That's Brian Adams. If any of you have ever seen the cartoon, not Hidalgo, what was the other one about the horse? Any other time I could think of. Anyway, there was a lot of Brian Adams in that movie. And he's got some songs I like pretty good. A lot of stuff that I have no use for at all, but he's got some good stuff out there. Okay. Can't think of that song. It's killing me. Come on, guys, to help me out here. Somebody throw that song out. I know everybody knows what I'm talking about. It's it'll come to me here in a minute. All right, let's go look at another one here. Let's this is a good thing. Let's get off of all of this for a minute. This is a neat deal. I was going to save this. I'm trying to figure out a format here that I want to do something a little bit differently. I'm thinking about if I want to do, of course, it would be kind of counterproductive after I just said that I was thinking about taking Mondays off and doing pre-records. And then I started thinking about doing 2 hours on Thursday to do more gun stuff, and I know that you guys would love that. But anyway, there's... there's some Boy Scout troops that are opposed to fixed blade knives. A lot of Boy Scout councils and stuff have banned fixed blade knives. And I can't imagine why in the world that they would do that. It would seem that they would ban the folders before anything else, because the folders are the ones, at least the non-locking folders. Because how many times have you guys that are, a little older, 30, 40, 50 years old, whatever, how many times when you were a kid was you doing something? Because we didn't have that type. We didn't have lock blade knives to the degree that we do now. And I can't tell you how many times, I'm talking dozens, I wouldn't even be surprised if it was hundreds. I don't know. But lots of times that I've closed a knife up on my finger because it didn't lock. You go to especially when you're digging, prying in something, you know, drilling a hole with the point of the knife, you know, yanking on it, and pretty soon it folds up on your finger. That is not cool. And I have done that so many times. So if I was a scout and decided I want to ban some knives, I would ban non-locking folders. But anyway, for whatever reason. So we're going to go through a few ideas here why the fixed blade knives are better for some things. And there's a question in this article here. The first thing, there's nothing in the Scout regulations that ban fixed blade knives. It's all according to the individuals that the Scoutmaster or the church or whatever who is sponsoring this troop. But the Boy Scout handbook, the Bear and Weeblow's handbook, has programs in them for the safe and responsible use of knives, as it should be. I mean, they're Boy Scouts, for crying out loud. And they've always thought that, you know, choosing the right equipment for the job at hand is the best answer to just about any problem. So, being aware that some of these have put limits on there, the BSA, the Boy Scouts of America, has neither encouraged nor banned fixed blade knives, nor have they set a limit on blade length. I can remember when I was a kid, when I was in Boy Scouts, I always had, you know, since I was old enough to have my own pockets, I've had a pocket knife and I've had a folding knife in it. And I think I got my first locking folder. What am I supposed to be answering, B2 Basic? I'm not answering because nobody has got the Spirit. Mini Minpin got it. I just saw it up there. Yeah, Spirit was the name of that. That is a great show. Good show. But that's why I didn't answer you, B2 Basic, because you didn't get the answer right. That's right. Yeah, if you guys haven't seen Spirit, it is a really good show. And I got to listening to the subject of some of his songs, a couple of his songs on there. And that's why I used them for my openers, and have for quite a while. And I don't know much about the guy or any of the rest of his songs or anything else, but there's a couple of them here that really fit in with what we do. You know, Peanut Rider, I did too. He said he cut himself numerous times. That was with that Cub Scout knife. He had a Cub Scout knife and a Boy Scout knife, and they both looked alike. They just had different emblems on them. And I can't begin to tell you how many times I cut myself with that knife. And 100 other ones just like it. okay, Mini Minpin, you had to cheat. That's okay. We don't mind. We want to win. Even if we have to cheat, we need to win. And you won. So, when I was a kid, I always carried a pocket knife in my pocket. I was going to tell you when I got my first locking folder was probably an old timer LB7, and I bought that in, hell, I was probably, I was probably 21 years old. I bought it in Beaumont, Texas. And or Houston, actually. I bought it in Houston, Texas. And then I got another one when I was in the Army. Another one just like it when I was in Germany in 83. And so up until then, for 20-some years, I joined the Army when I was 26, so probably for 22 years, I carried regular folding knives. The only locking one I ever saw was a, you guys have seen the ones that have kind of the Boy Scout looking blade and an awl, a leather punch type. There's the only two blades it had. And then, and the blade itself locked. But I always thought that was kind of goofy because pocket knives weren't supposed to lock. They were supposed to cut the hell out of your finger, and it always worked pretty well. So, anyway. Well, let's since we got off track here, let's go ahead and take a break. And we'll come back. I want to get back on this knife thing here in a minute. So, actually, it'll be more like in a few minutes. In about 11 minutes, because I want to play this for you. You may have heard it before, but you're going to hear it again because I like it.
There was a lawyer once. His name was Francis Scott Key. He penned a song that I'm sure you're aware of. You've seen it. It's in most hymnals throughout our churches. It's called the National Anthem. It is our song as an American. We go, however, to a ball game. We stand in our church services and we sing the words of that song. And they float over our minds and our lips and we don't even realize what we're singing. Most of us have memorized it as a child, but we've never really thought about what it means. Let me tell you a story. Francis Scott Key was a lawyer in Baltimore. The colonies were engaged in vicious conflict with the mother country, Britain. Because of this conflict and the protractedness of it, they had accumulated prisoners on both sides. The American colonies had prisoners and the British had prisoners. And the American government initiated a move. They went to the British and they said, "Let us negotiate for the release of these prisoners." They said, "We want to send a man out to discuss this with you." They were holding the American prisoners in boats about 1,000 yards offshore. And they said, "We want to send a man by the name of Francis Scott Key. He will come out and negotiate to see if we can make a mutual exchange." On the appointed day, in a rowboat, he went out to this boat and he negotiated with the British officials. And they reached a conclusion that men could be exchanged on a one-for-one basis. Francis Scott Key, jubilant with the fact that he'd been successful, went down below in the boats, and what he found was a cargo hold full of humanity, men. And he said, "Men, I've got news for you tonight. You're free." He said, "Tonight I have negotiated successfully your return to the colonies." He said, "You'll be taken out of this boat, out of this filth, out of your chains." As he went back up on board to arrange for their passage to the shore, the admiral came and he said, "We have a slight problem." He said, "We will still honor our commitment to release these men, but it'll be merely academic after tonight. It won't matter." Francis Scott Key said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, Mr. Key," he said, "tonight we have laid an ultimatum upon the colonies. Your people will either capitulate and lay down the colors of that flag that you think so much of, or you see that fort right over there, Fort Henry?" He said, "We're going to remove it from the face of the earth." He said, "How are you going to do that?" He said, "If you will, scan the horizon of the sea." And as he looked, he could see hundreds of little dots. And he said, "That's the entire British war fleet." He said, "All of the gunpowder, all of the armament is being called upon to demolish that fort. It will be here within striking distance in a matter of about 2.5 hours. He said, "The war is over. These men would be free anyway." He said, "You can't shell that fort." He said, that's a large fort. He said, "It's full of women and children." He says, "It's predominantly not a military fort." He said, "Don't worry about it." They said, "We've left them a way out." And he said, "What's that?" He said, "Do you see that flag way up on the rampart?" He said, "We have told them that if they will lower that flag, the shelling will stop immediately. And we'll know that they've surrendered. And you'll now be under British rule." Francis Scott Key went down below and told the men what was about to happen. And they said, "How many ships?" He said, "Hundreds." The ships got closer. Francis Scott Key went back up on top and he said, "Men, I'll shout down to you what's going on as we watch." As twilight began to fall, and as the haze hung over the ocean as it does at sunset, suddenly, the British war fleet unleashed. says the sound was deafening. There were so many guns that there were no reliefs. He said it was absolutely impossible to talk or hear. He said suddenly the sky, although dark, was suddenly lit. And he says from down below, all he could hear the men, the prisoners, saying was, tell us where the flag is. What have they done with the flag? Is the flag still flying over the rampart? Tell us. 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours into the shelling. Every time the bomb would explode and it would be close to the flag, they could see the flag in the illuminated red glare of that bomb. And Francis Scott Key would report down to the men below, it's still up. It's not down. The admiral came and he said, your people are insane. He said, what's the matter with them? He said, don't they understand this is an impossible situation? Francis Scott Key said he remembered what George Washington had said. He said, the thing that sets the American Christian apart from all other people in the world is he will die on his feet before he'll live on his knees. The admiral said, we have now instructed all of the guns to focus on the rampart to take that flag down. He said, we don't understand something. Our reconnaissance tells us that that flag has been hit directly again and again and again, and yet it's still flying. We don't understand that. But he said, now we're about to bring every gun for the next 3 hours to bear on that point. Francis Scott Key said the barrage was unmerciful. All that he could hear was the men down below praying. The prayer. God, keep that flag flying where we last saw it. Sunrise came. He said there was a heavy mist hanging over the land, but the rampart was tall enough. There stood the flag, completely nondescript, in shreds. The flag pole itself was at a crazy angle. The flag was still at the top. Francis Scott Key went aboard and immediately went into Fort Henry to see what had happened. And what he found had happened was that that flagpole and that flag had suffered repetitious direct hits. And when hit had fallen, but men, fathers, knew what it meant for that flag to be on the ground, although knowing that all of the British guns were trained on it, walked over and held it up humanly until they died. Their bodies were removed and others took their place. Francis Scott Key said what held that flagpole in place at that unusual angle were patriots' bodies. He penned the song, oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, or the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that the flag was still there. Oh, say, does that star-spangled banner yet fly and wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave? The debt was demanded. The price, it was paid.
Oh, say, can you see by the dawn early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through fight for the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, and the rockets break clear, the bombs bursting. Say, does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the
I like that explanation. I think I played this several years ago, 3 or 4 years ago on the show, but I thought I'd put it out there again. I was reminded of it by another listener, and I said, you know what, that sounds like a good thing to throw out there. So we're back. Let's get back to our knife deal here. Excuse me. And we're going to look at some reasons why the non-folder, the rigid blade knife, is better in many regards than the folder. And one of them is certainly the safety that we've already talked about. I mean, anything mechanical can fail. There are some that I've had, and it may be not because of a mechanical failure. It may be because of you're bearing down on something and you get the lock up against a piece of wood or a finger for the other hand or something and accidentally disengage the lock. And that would be one thing. Maybe they just collapse. You know, some of those ones that there's a name for it, and I forgot what it is. The ones that have the little thin piece of metal inside right up to the front by the blade, like my Columbia River knife and tool. But this is a real good solid design of the one that I carry here, and I've been pretty rough with it and have never had any problem with it. I've seen some of the cheap, you know, Indian or Chinese, Pakistani folders. I've seen a lot of those fail with not very tough use at all. But this Columbia River knife and tool and the Bucks and the K-Bars and the old-timers and stuff like that, I've never seen one of those fail. Not that they couldn't, but I've just never seen it. But anything, like I said, anything mechanical could possibly fail. So another thing about them is the price. You can get a better quality knife for the same price as a maybe a lesser quality folder. The folders are always going to be more expensive. Maybe that didn't sound right, because there's cheaper folders out there that are not. You get a good quality fixed blade knife. And I went to a Big Five in Farmington while I was there, and they had this sale on some really, and I've still got one of them, really, really, really heavy-duty fixed blade. You know, the handle's wrapped in paracord. It was probably, It was probably 5/16 of an inch thick there in the middle. Of course, tapered off to the point, but it was a hell of a rugged knife. And they had those on sale at Big Five for whatever reason, clearing them out for $25. I went and bought all of them. I think I sold them for like $69.95 or something, you know, something under the suggested retail of them, and sold them just as fast as I could put them on the counter. And I kept a couple of them. Like I said, I've still got one of them. And they were very inexpensive. So you can get a good quality knife for a little less money than some of the folders. Also, your non-folding knife is, you may find it to be a little bit, it's easier to clean. You know, you start scaling fish and gutting stuff and cutting up vegetables and doing all this kind of stuff. And then you wind up with a bunch of food poisoning creating bacteria and stuff in the lock and in the knife itself. You can get, you go to field dress something, you wind up with guts and blood and stuff in there. And then you want to use that same knife for food. Peeling a potato or something. So a lot of us don't carry several different knives for different chores. We carry, one knife for pretty much everything. So it's much more sanitary. The fixed blade is easier to clean, doesn't have the cracks and crevices and hinges and stuff for crap to accumulate in. They're a little faster because of the way the sheath and the way you don't have to, drag it out of a pocket. Now I understand, when I took my knife instructor training from, God, I knew I was going to do that. I knew I was going to forget. But at any rate, we got to be pretty damn fast with yanking that out. But the average guy, it's a little slower to drag it out of a pocket or somewhere and then figure out how to get it open and stuff. And this kind of goes back to carrying the same type of gun in the same place, because you carry one knife that opens and locks one way sometimes, and then the next time you buy a knife, you get another one that does something different. And sometimes it costs you a little time in the deployment of that knife. So every knife that I've carried since 2003, late 2003, has been a Columbia River knife and tool. And I've carried four or five different sizes and blade styles, point styles and whatnot, but they've all opened and locked and felt the same. For that reason, because they've done well. The first one I had was a smallest one the guy gave me as a gift, and I said, I looked and it's made in Taiwan. Are you kidding me? You just gave me a Taiwan-made knife? And it rode around in the glove box of the truck or somewhere for the longest time, and probably for 5 years. I kept it around at least 3 years, 3 or 4 years. And finally I decided I'd try it. And I said, well, it feels kind of good. It works good. I'm going to give it a shot just for the heck of it. Nobody's looking. Nobody's going to know I'm carrying a Taiwanese made knife. Well, of course, the Columbia River Knife and Tool is an American company. A lot of the knife companies have moved overseas. K-Bar moved over there. I think K-Bar did. I'm not positive, but I know that, Old Timer did. Schrade moved to China. The quality of their knives is still fine. It's kind of unpalatable to buy from China. But the knives themselves are still as good as they ever were, as far as I know. So anyway, I decided to try this little Taiwanese-made knife, and I got a little unruly with it a time or two, and the thing just wouldn't fail. It did well. It held a good edge. Wasn't terribly hard to sharpen like a damn buck. I hate buck knives. You couldn't run fast enough to give me a buck knife. This knife sharpened well. It sharpened to put a good edge on it. And it held up well. So I said, what the heck? So after that, I've tried, couple of others, a couple of bigger ones. That was a kind of a smallish one that he gave me. And now I got to look that guy up and one of these days and tell him thank you for turning me onto these knives. They've done really good. So one thing that, you know, the fixed blade is a little faster to deploy in some regards because of not having to open it, depending on what kind of sheath you have. You know, I love the big K-bars. I've got a really, really nice, it's a, I don't know, nickel, some kind of nickel-plated K-bar with the Kraton grip and everything. It's a great knife, works really well, it holds an excellent edge. And those K-bars have been around for a long, long time. And I love that knife. I carry on me every day, I carry a fixed blade. What is that? Let me see what it is here. It's a K-bar. It's the TDK, I think is what they call it. I believe that's what it was. It's kind of built at an angle about a 20-degree angle, 20, 25 degrees between the grip and the blade. And it's built as a defense against protecting your gun hand. Somebody gets a hold of your gun hand, traps it against your gun or against your side or something. This is a quick deployable knife with the perfect angle to use in a how would I call it, an underhanded type sweep, I guess would be the best way to describe that. Works really well. I've got two of those. I've got a large one that is packed away in a box for a rainy day, and then I've got this medium size, a small one that I wear every day. And it's I don't think they make the TDKs anymore, and that's unfortunate because they're great knives. Holds it. This thing is man, you can operate with this one. It is so sharp. Holds an excellent edge. But the thing about most of your fixed blade knives is that they're a little, you know, you can't just slip it in your pocket. That's the one thing that the folder has going for it, is you can take, my folder is the one that I carry every day. This blade is probably, let's see, one, two, it's probably 3.5, 3.25 inches long. Nice full grip, so I can get, you know, full hand grip on it. And I it's got the Carson flipper on it, you know, the CRKT knives. It's a great knife. I've been carrying this one for a hell of a long time. But it's a little easier to put away. Of course, if you're out in the field, you're out in the bush, well, it doesn't really matter that much when you've got a longer fixed blade knife there. But you know, the fixed blade also, depending on who makes it and who make the grip and everything, the pommel, or I think of the knife, is an additional tool, whether it's for striking or I don't know, hitting somebody in the head with, I guess. But now the ones that I was told you I bought for $25 from Big Five had a rather triangular shaped, kind of halfway pointed butt end on it, on the pommel there, that was definitely an additional weapon, and worked well for that kind of stuff. Let's see here. That's all I can think of right off the top of my head. There's nothing else on here. I guess we could. I think we've been done knife sharpening and stuff before. Probably don't need to get into that again, but. And Doc, the 110, I had one of those, and I absolutely despise buck. I will never, ever own another buck. I've tried for other people. I've tried. They don't sharpen as well. Once they're good and sharp, they hold an edge pretty good, but damn, they're hard to get an edge on. Or at least the ones that I've tried, anyway. Let me go down through here and check the chat room before we... Before we sign out here, see if there's Michael Janich is who I was thinking about a while ago that I took the knife instructor class from. That was actually, it was the year Amy and I got married. I think it was 2009. I think it was that fall, I believe. Let's see. All right. I don't see anything that can't get by without. Liner Lock, Yakima Glock, thank you. That's exactly. And Spider Co. is the type of knives that we used during the... I still have my trainer that we used for the class. And, yeah, the Liner Lock is the ones that I was trying to think of a while ago. And I forgot what the model name was of the Spider Co.'s that we, that was part of the, part of our tuition for the class, as we got to keep our Spider Co. folder, the trainer that we got. Can't remember where it's at, but I've still got it, probably in the gun safe. All right. I'm sweeping down through here real quick. And see if I can see anything I need to. Okay, B2 Basic, thank you. I need to remember that every day if I can. Certainly at least two or three times a week. The Arms Expo coming up in Yakima, Washington in June. That would be June. Whoops, boy, that didn't work out well. Hold on here a minute. Man, I messed that up big time. There we go. Why do I keep doing that? All right, got it. Okay, June 17th, 18th, and 19th will be the expo in Yakima. And then the 24th, 25th, and 26th will be the three-day personal defense handgun class with night shoot. And I think we're going to try to fit in a... Counter-Strike class up there too. Now, this is also pending on, of course, I know it's still 2 months away, but it's still over 2 months away. But this is dependent on, whether we get people to sign up for it or not. We've had numerous people say they wanted to and were going to and whatnot. So we'll see I think I've set a date on there for registration. And if we don't get the people signed up for that class, then it probably won't be happening. And I'll save 3,000 miles of wear and tear on my truck and stay here and cry in my beer over that weekend, I guess. But no, we got plenty to do. Okay, let's see. Okay. All right. I guess that's everything. So I'm going to scoot on out of here, and we'll see you guys tomorrow night. It's Tuesday. Amy and I, either one, will be on Wednesday. Wednesday night, I will be in Tucson at a constitutional meeting with one of the Finicum girls. And then I'll be back here. We will be doing a show Thursday. And Liberty Lounge will absolutely be a pre-record or an archive for Friday, because I will be in Phoenix at another rally, a Liberty rally, with one of the Finicum girls. And so Wednesday and Friday, you can count on absolutely not a show from either one of us. So that is the way it has to be for this week. As I said, duty calls. So, all right, I'm going to get out of here. I'm rambling. So I will talk to you guys on tomorrow night. Wow, I'm rambling bad now.
Thanks for joining us for another edition of The Shooting Bench. Please join Cope Monday through Friday for the most politically incorrect firearms information show on talk radio.
Lead, follow, or get the hell out of the way. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for you to decide who you are. Somebody should call them. Somebody should write a letter. Somebody should try and stop that. Somebody should do something. I challenge you to look in the mirror and tell me what you see. If there's somebody there, that would be you. It's time for you to do something. There is no doubt that the Constitution is hanging by a thread. It's not going to wait for us much longer.